Hey, as we were preparing for today's episode, we're going to talk about the coronavirus vaccines and all that. We got some big news from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So Mike Berry just came in. He's got fresh off the presses, hot off the presses, a copy of a decision that just came down concerning Coach Joe Kennedy and his prayer at the 50-yard line in Bremerton, Washington. Mike, what happened?
Well, as you said, Stuart, hot off the press, we just got a decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Unfortunately, they ruled against Coach Kennedy. They said that he is not protected by the First Amendment when he prays silently alone at the 50-yard line after football games, but that's not the end of this story. We're going to appeal this, and we will take this to the U.S. Supreme Court if we have to.
Now, looking at your face, you don't look surprised with this outcome.
No. Unfortunately, we knew that this was going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
This is the Ninth Circuit, after all. Despite the fact that we've actually been able to get some excellent judges put on the Ninth Circuit in recent years, this is still an uphill battle. But the game's not over yet. There's still time on the clock.
And we're going to do some additional videos. You can look for those on our website and social media, where we'll unpack this a bit more after you had some more time to take a look at it.
So absolutely.
I'm going to let you exit out. Thank you, Mike. And we're going to get to our topic of the day. Thanks
again. All right.
Again.
Stay tuned.
All right. All right, now to the topic for today. The vaccine is rolling out. Every day we see images of people lining up their cars, but how far can the government legally go in demanding that someone get the shot? Or put it another way, how should government balance public health against personal liberty? Hi, I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live, and it really is live, as you can probably tell watching this right now. This is part two of our series, The Madness of America's March Toward Tyranny. Before we get started, just an encouragement to you to like our videos and share them. That's how we get to meet new people and how we increase the audience for this. You can be an important part of that. So as you share this with your friends who are like-minded and who may be interested in the things we talk about, just consider this our sincere thank you for doing that in advance for sharing these around. And you can subscribe too. Our guest today is Christine Pratt. She's one of our newest attorneys here, along with her husband, Jordan, at First Liberty Institute. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
This is a topic that a lot of people are talking about from one way or another. We know there are a lot of different opinions about this and all. And before we get started, because this is a little unusual for us, I do want to share a few things that are important for you to know. Number one, we're not going to be offering medical advice, because that's not what we do. We're a religious liberty law firm, and we're not doctors, so there will be others who can enter that conversation. We're also not offering advice on whether you should get the vaccine. That's a choice that you'll have to make, and we want you to be able to make an informed decision on that. We are going to discuss your rights under the law, and with that, we're going to offer, I wanted to put this the right way, we're going to offer observations on the law, but we're not offering legal advice, because that's something different. If you want that, you're going to need to go to your attorney to get that, but we thought you would really be encouraged to hear some of this about where the law is when it comes to the vaccine and our rights as religious people of faith. Christine, did I leave anything out?
I think you covered all of it. You did a great job.
I'm going to let you talk from here. First, let's talk about where the edges are on this. One of our followers online asked whether an employer could fire someone if they did not get the shot. So we're going to start out with that. How far can government or an employer go with this? And let's start out with the federal government. What can the federal government require?
So when I read the United States Constitution, I don't see in there where the federal government has the power to mandate vaccines. That would be too coercive. And frankly, we've never seen that before.
Yeah.
But it does get a little more complicated when you start going down to the other entities.
Because there are examples in the past of states actually doing this during a health crisis, which is where we are right now. Tell us about that.
That's right. So right now, the Supreme Court has talked about state-mandated vaccine requirements by the state. And it goes back to the very first case, and the case that most people are relying on comes from 1905.
It's been a while.
I think it's 116 years ago. It took place in Massachusetts. It's called Jacobson v. Massachusetts. And back then they were dealing with a smallpox epidemic.
Right.
And Massachusetts said, everybody's got to get the shot, no exceptions. Unless I think children who get a doctor's note or something like that. And somebody challenged it. Now, they did not challenge it because of their religious convictions, because of problems with their conscience against the vaccine. They just simply said, I don't think you have the power to do this. This violates my rights of liberty.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court said, actually, the state can. Sometimes the state has laws keeping people safe. and so we're going to allow it in this case. But it's a very old case. And in fact, one of the interesting things about this case that the Supreme Court said then was, you know, we don't let people just not serve in the military because they have objections to the war. So we're not going to let you object to this vaccine either.
And but that's changed over the last 100 years.
That has changed. Today, we allow people to conscientiously object to serving in our military. So it would be very interesting to see that.
So that deals with what government and state could do. What about, let's say that I'm at my job and my employer says everybody needs to get the shot. Where are your rights there?
It gets a little more dicey there because even right now, hospitals require a lot of their staff to get the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
And under the Constitution, states have some leeway there. But I will say there's some hope on that case because almost every state, in fact, I think every state actually allows exemptions for like medical conditions to not receive vaccines. And 45 out of 50 states let you get an exemption for a religious reason.
Yeah. And one of the things as we talk about this, I want to make sure people understand, we know that people watching this have different opinions about this. And some say, I've already got the shot, some are going to get it, others are saying I have questions about it, others are saying absolutely not. We want you to know we honor and respect that, and that's a conversation for another place. But for this conversation, we just want to talk about where the law is as you make those decisions, because we thought it would be helpful to pass that along. And with that, with the government mandate, the government is government. I mean, they talk like government, so it's never going to be the government mandate comes down.
Right.
Instead, we're seeing stories about vaccine passports that you would have to get. It makes it sound like we're going on vacation somewhere. What about that? I mean, can the government make you have documentation that shows that you have received the vaccine?
Well, it's funny you bring up vaccine passports because the WHO actually advises that they do not recommend vaccine passports.
Yeah.
They think it would be really unfair and hard on a lot of people who maybe they haven't been offered the vaccine yet, and then they can't travel. So that's where things are right now. We're probably going to just see a lot of litigation where we're figuring all of this out because the COVID-19 epidemic has just raised a lot of questions we haven't fought over before. We haven't decided yet. And we have to pray for discernment about what each of us think is the right thing to do and figure it out as we go.
Now, as far as I know, I'm not currently in a group that's being offered the vaccine yet, so I haven't had to make the decision myself personally. But I have friends and family who have expressed opinions about it one way or the other, and pretty strongly, I might add. I mean, everybody has an opinion. Some of those who don't want to get the shot, some say none of them are acceptable to me. Others say, well, this one's okay, but that one's not. Help us understand, because you've been looking into this, help us understand what those arguments are and where they're coming from as people raise, in particular here, religious objections to the vaccine.
It's a really fascinating debate that's happening right now, even among people who are already religious and pro-life. There are groups that, even individuals that I totally respect, that are saying, look, I am an ethicist, I am a philosopher. There's a really great paper put out by a certain think tank, it's the Ethics and Public Policy Center.
Yeah.
And the way that they came down on this is they said, we think all of the vaccines, regardless of whatever relationship they have to the use of cell lines developed from aborted fetal tissue.
Which is why this is such an issue.
Exactly. A long time ago, back in the early 1970s, we found that there was a cell line from a baby that we think was aborted. We don't really know the circumstances. We know the baby wasn't aborted or killed to create this cell line that's used in science. It was sort of an accident. They just was like taken from it.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, a very long time ago. And so this particular cell line, HEK-293 is like the name of it.
Yeah, which if you're into bioethics, that's something that everybody knows about. They've talked about this for many years. It's not a surprise or something new.
It's incredibly common. They use HEK-293 to develop medicines. Almost all processed foods are tested using this cell line. So if you eat anything that comes out of the grocery store, you've had products that were used or tested with this. A lot of makeup is tested using this cell line.
And to be clear, these are cells that they took and they grew more cells and more cells and more cells.
Right.
And we're generations down, and they're used literally all around the world in labs everywhere. I mean, so that's why this is such a question.
It's a fascinating question. And so there are members of the pro-life community who say, you know, we have looked at this and we think any of the vaccines are safe. It doesn't matter if it's Moderna or Pfizer or the Johnson & Johnson, any of them are fine.
Yeah, and it's not a question whether they're safe, it's a question of whether for a pro-lifer they're morally acceptable.
Exactly, they're so permissible.
Yes.
Yes, according to this camp over here.
Yeah.
And there's
another camp.
There is another camp. And this other camp contains people that I respect a lot as well. They say, well, first of all, not all the vaccines are equal. And so they recognize that Moderna and Pfizer, they were not created using this cell line. But when the scientists were testing it after it was developed, yeah, the vaccine was developed, they did use the cell line when they were sort of testing it out in different context. And then the Johnson & Johnson vaccine
used. To be clear, is to say that none of those cells that we're talking about are in the vaccine.
That's correct.
Right. They tested it on them, but they're
right.
not in it.
Well, and they're not in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine either. It was just that they were part of the process of developing the vaccine.
Okay.
And so they say that, you know, if in their expert opinion as ethicists, which is a real, I mean, that's an expertise that people have. I'm a lawyer. They said there's a difference, and that they say you have a moral obligation because it connects the vaccine to something immoral, which is abortion.
Right.
And so they're saying the connection of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to abortion is so problematic that Christians or anyone who objects to abortion should refuse the Johnson & Johnson vaccine if they have the option to. So it gets complicated, but it really comes down to this question. If you're on a boat in the middle of the ocean, right, and you know, ethicists teach, and makes sense that they do, that cannibalism is wrong, right? It's like this quandary that we're in our society, where what do you do? If you're alone on a boat and let's say the person next to you dies and the only way you can live is, it's a gross example, but if you engage in cannibalism, is God gonna judge you? Should the government judge you once you reach your country and you get there and they go, wait a second, we have laws against this.
Yeah.
Again, not murder. That's the kind of moral quandary that, you know, if you look into these issues, every person has to figure out for themselves, which vaccine am I gonna take? If I take a vaccine, you know, God, like, what do you require of me? What is my place in this whole thing?
And I have relatives and friends who have medical issues that cause them concern about the medical reactions they might have to the vaccine. So that's one group. But that's not our discussion here, because that's for someone else in another spot to talk about.
Sure.
Our specific concern here are religious objections, which might come out of that pro-life point of view that many people who are watching this have. And again, as you pointed out so clearly, people with good intentions and smart people that I look up to are coming down on both sides of this. So everybody is going to have to make their own decision on it. I mean, we're not going to tell you which way to go. But it does bring up for us as a religious liberty law firm the question of what does religious freedom protect when it comes to whether you decide to take the vaccine? Is there cover for you? What's the answer to that?
The answer, unfortunately, I'm a lawyer. The answer is it depends. It really depends. We have the First Amendment, which is it's what makes our country great. And we have freedom of religion in our country. And a lot of states recognize that. States have something called a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. There are many, many of those, not every state, but it's in a lot of states. And it may be possible if a state tries to require the vaccine, you can challenge that vaccine mandate under the state Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Yeah. And basically, we're going to have to wait to see until someone does challenge, assuming they do,
right,
and see how that plays out.
And another, for like private employers right now, Title VII is the name of the law that prohibits discrimination against religious people. So now we have a question under Title VII, when are the times when, you know, your employer can but or cannot infringe on your religious liberties? And, you know, the answer to that is probably going to be decided in the courts moving up, because we're going to see some interesting activity on this.
So let me read it back to you to make sure if I'm hearing it correctly.
Okay.
The law is not perfectly clear on this, but it does appear that there is a path for someone to raise a religious objection successfully on this issue. It may be a difficult path, but they could do it.
Yeah, and I think it's a fight worth fighting as well. So it you know, we certainly would be interested to hear from stories of what people are going through. We can't necessarily take every case that comes in the door, but we're so concerned about religious freedom, and we're here to fight to protect religious freedom. And right now, if an employer wants to require something that infringes on someone's religious freedom, then the law says that person, that employee with the religious convictions, should have a reasonable accommodation, as long as it's not like some grave undue hardship on the employer. So that's where it gets dicey, and that's where the courts have to figure out, well, when is it a hardship and in what way? And
so, but for example, it would be different if you were in the healthcare industry than if you worked at a tire shop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to play out differently depending, because the requirements are different.
That's right. The job you're performing is different. And it may be really easy if you work a job where teleworking is a big part of your job, and it's how everybody kind of gets their work done. That would be an example where I would see it difficult for your employer to make you get a vaccine when you're not interacting with people every single day, like, say, a nurse in a hospital is.
All right. I was really looking forward to this conversation because I wanted to hear all of this, because it's a lot to think about and to consider. And as we talked about, all of us are going to have to make our own decisions. I mean, we're each going to make our choices based on where we are and our thoughts about this. And I appreciate your adding to that conversation. It's very helpful.
I've loved being here.
All right. Thank you. Well, and we'll have you back sometime. Hey, one of our, just wanted to point this out. Well, actually, I want to do this before we go. Because I had it written down here, so I was going to let you go, but no, you can't leave yet.
Okay.
Here's the hardest question, and this is in the current environment, because it plays into what I just said. In your opinion, and this is just it's a discussion question, is America big enough to have differences of opinion on this issue? Can we do that as a nation?
I absolutely think we can. I think that's what makes America great, is the fact that we, from the beginning, were a country that have lots of different people and lots of different beliefs, and that's just what makes us special, is that we can learn to live together, to respect our differences, and keep moving forward.
All right. So. Hey, thank you again. I'll just keep thanking you over and over again. Hey, before we let you go, I just want to remind you that we did create FirstLibertyLive.com so that we could have a direct connection with you, which is important to us in the current cancel culture, that we know that we can make that connection each week and as we release content. So if you would please, at the top of FirstLibertyLive.com, you'll see a blue subscribe button. Click on that, and we'll send you an email each time one of these episodes comes out to remind you to watch. It may also, the page will just ask you, do you want us to notify you when we're on live? And that also then will pop up a reminder when we start the live stream each week. Also, if you would please, do like and share, and also bookmark that page so that you can find it again. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, we are a nonprofit law firm. All of the clients that we represent, every one of them never receives a bill from us. We do what we do for them for free on their end, but it does cost, of course, to do that, and that's where we depend on people like you to support the work that we do, to join with us in this, because we know that you care about the outcomes that we're working on just as much as we do. So if this resonates with you, if this is something you'd like to connect with, please do click on the big red donate button, and let me just say thank you in advance for that. Next week is going to be another hot topic. Our attorney Keisha Russell will be here, and she's going to talk about the Equality Act, which it's passed the House as we're talking here now and is on its way to the Senate. And we're going to break that down and explain the religious freedom implications of the Equality Act and what it means for you. So join us right here next week on First Liberty Live.